Hi, I'm William Kent Krueger, author of Ordinary Grace and the New York Times bestselling Cork O'Connor Mystery Series. And you are listening or watching the mendacious, is that really a word? Mr. Media.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to writer-director Sally L. Hosseini and actor James Floyd, whose exciting new indie film drama, My Brother the Devil, has won major prizes at major film festivals around the world. Stick around. This one has it all, including a twist I'm working really hard not to mention. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. The show is brought to you today by Amazon.com, the world's greatest store for everything from books and movies to computers, TVs, and even my favorite soft drink, Pepsi Wild Cherry. Thinking about buying something online from Amazon or just want to do a little window shopping? You can save yourself a lot of money and help support Mr. Media, that's me, by clicking on one of the Amazon ads at MrMedia.com and start your shopping with us. Get yourself the new iPad or Kindle Fire. Feeling a little racy today? Amazon's got what you need to feel exciting and new, as they used to sing on The Love Boat. Remember, start your next shopping trip from the comfort of your own home, car, hotel, or office with Amazon.com at MrMedia.com. That's right, MrMedia.com. And folks, thanks for your support. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of young men who think everything in life is just the way they see it, even though the women in their lives suspect it isn't, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. In the first half of My Brother the Devil, you will think you know where director Sally L. Hosseini is going with the story. And it seems somewhat predictable at that point, and it's easy to see that some viewers will shrug and ask themselves, what's the big deal? But that's why movies, like life itself, rarely unfold in a single act. Now, set in London, the story of youth gangs, frustration, sexuality, and brotherhood may remind some of a 1992 British film that I can't mention by name because it might give too much away. So let's just say, watch My Brother the Devil in its entirety, and you'll know what I mean. Now, the film stars James Floyd and Fadi El Sayed as brothers sharing a room and a bunk bed in their parents' home, a place that has clearly become crowded by expectations of life and the stranglehold of neighborhood gangs. What may surprise many viewers is that this testosterone-driven indie drama was written and directed by a woman, Sally L. Hosseini, who probably didn't think I was going to stumble over Sally. This is her making her feature film debut. Now, it may take a few more successful efforts, but don't be surprised to one day hear her name mentioned in the same breath as Zero Dark Thirty and the Hurt Locker director, Kathryn Bigelow. Now, Sally L. Hosseini and James Floyd, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hi.
Thank you.
Good to have you guys here. I appreciate that James had a big smile on his face when I made that reference to Kathryn Bigelow. I take it he was okay with that.
Yeah, okay.
Well, so, I mean, congratulations on this film. Have you guys gotten tired of being complimented on it yet?
No, I mean, it's been out for about a year now, so it's been a crazy ride, that's for sure. We've been at over 40 festivals around the world, which is pretty incredible, and really great to share the film with so many different audiences.
And you guys, from what I've seen, you guys have each won your share of awards around the world.
The movie's won lots.
I thought I saw a Best Newcomer Award for the director, and I thought I saw some acting awards for the star of the film. No?
Yes.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, it's true.
Right, just being a little...
British modesty.
Yeah, that's it. All right. Well, let's start a little bit with the story itself, Sally. You wrote and directed this, as I mentioned. Tell me a little bit about... I'm looking at you here... for those people who are seeing on video, you don't look like someone who's very steeped in, a British gangland. Tell me how this story came to you.
Absolutely. So I live about 10 minutes from where we shot the entire movie in Hackney in London. And because it was my first film, I decided to set it in the neighborhood where I lived. And I actually thought I'd end up shooting it in my apartment, and that it was going to be a kind of really guerrilla independent film. But the project just grew and grew. It actually took 6 years to make, and was, you know, a big adventure than I had anticipated when I first set out. I made the brothers from Egypt, or, well, they're actually born in Britain, born in London, but their parents are Egyptian, and that allowed me to view it from that color. Half Egyptian, so that's why I wanted to make the brothers Egyptian as well. And it's, when I started writing the script, I was attracted to a lot of the youth in my area, specifically the Arab youth, and other youth too, just because in them I saw this kind of mix of cultures and lots of kind of their struggle for identity, I guess, was something I could relate to. And so was attracted for that as the environment for the film. And then felt a fraud when I started writing that first draft because I didn't grow up in that environment. So my background's documentary, so I went and got to know a lot of guys who are involved in the world for real and spent many years learning the language, soaking it all up. In fact, Ayman Hamdouchi, who plays Repo in the movie, the one with the tattoo on his neck, he was my script consultant. And through relationships with Ayman and there's Asari Kasim, who ended up working on the production side of things, they're really helpful in helping me get to know the world, learn the language. And it's, you know, by the end, you know, I could write urban.
Well, I was going to say, how do you go to guys like that and say, you know, I'd like to study you a little bit. I'd like to see what you're all about. You know, I would think they'd be like, I can think of some language that might have been used in the film to respond, but it's hard to imagine a situation where they're like, oh, sure, yeah, let's do this.
Well, actually, it was the opposite because, you know, a lot of them star in the movies of their lives anyway, and it, you know, as soon as they know what you're doing is a movie, they're really interested in that. And you know, certainly I was very open about my intentions and the types of things I was interested in. So as soon as they realized I wasn't doing some sensationalist news piece or was looking for just some shallow headline, but actually wanted to get to know them fully and represent them correctly and honestly on screen, they were game to be part of it. I mean, you know, it was really through the generosity army of people, you know, in fact, they were the believers before the industry. So, you know, it was a struggle to get this film financed and actually made, but it was the faith that all the people I've gotten to know had in the whole project that, you know, kept me going through all the tough times.
Any dangerous moments in over the years?
Well, I don't know. I always felt, I mean, danger's a weird one. Yeah, it's always there, I guess. But I always felt very safe.
And James, let's bring you into the conversation. Boy, and I'm just going to be real careful about what I say and what I don't say. So, you know, stare me down if I go in the wrong direction here. But you play a pretty tough older brother, member of a gang in this. Any of this ring true from your own experience, or how did you prepare for this role?
None of it rings true from a first-hand experience. I mean, I'm not from the streets, and I'm not Arab, and I have completely different, you know, life and perspectives to the guys that the movie's inspired by, especially the character of Rashid. So, but I was very fortunate. I had a filmmaker who had done, as she said, you know, 4 or 5 years of research in that world. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how I like to work. So once I was fortunate enough to be given the part, I had about 5 or 6 months before the movie was greenlit to basically just spend time and kind of, you know, live with these guys, because Sally had such amazing relationships with them that as soon as I was introduced to them, I said, look, I'm doing the movie with Sally. I'm one of the actors. They were, you know, more than happy to let me into their world, which is, you know, you mentioned danger. I mean, it's dangerous just to let someone into your world. That's where it comes in. Once they've let you in, it's usually fine unless you really screw up. But yeah, so I just basically spent, you know, really 5-6 days a week sometimes, you know, 7 p.m. to sort of 7 a.m. with these guys and just kind of soaking up their soul and getting to understand them, because, like I said, my experiences are just so left field of what they've gone through. So if you're going to play a character that's that different to you, I think the only way to do it is that people call it method acting. You can call it whatever you want. To me, it's just logical common sense, really, to go and find experiences and start to understand how your character would feel and think. So then when I can get on set, Sally's not worrying about an actor, you know, standing out and ruining the movie.
That was one of my worries, which obviously I shared with James early on, because I had wanted, I was casting a lot of people who'd never acted before, who had experiences of the world, or whose lives were kind of quite similar to the characters they were playing. And so I was a bit concerned. I actually couldn't find somebody from the world who was prepared to play the role of Rashid because of where his character, the journey his character goes on. There were, I know, I'm skating on thin ice here. So, you know, because of the twists and turns his character takes, I couldn't find anyone who's prepared to do that role. And so therefore felt like, oh no, I was going to have to resort to an actor. But obviously James, you know, did an incredible job and, you know, and proved that, you know, he didn't stand out. I mean, he did an amazing job.
Well, it's interesting, James liked that. It's interesting since we've turned on the video and seeing you guys, I'm looking at James and it's hard to believe that he's that same guy who is so, can be so terrorizing and threatening, in My Brother the Devil, who, I mean, you know, the first half of the film, it's like, holy crap, you know, James, I'm looking at you now and I'm thinking, yeah, you look like a very kind of a gentle, cultured young man. I hear the accent and I think, you know, but I mean, that's acting, right? You gave that persona.
Yeah. I mean, I was very fortunate. If you have the time to do it, if you have those, you know, 5-6 months, you can do it. And if you have a filmmaker who's already got the in into that world, then it's actually not that difficult. I mean, the problem is this, is that most movies are made very, very fast, and you're cast, generally speaking, like a week, sometimes even days before you start shooting. You know, I mean, I played Freddie Mercury last year, and I was cast, I think it was 9 or 10 days before we started shooting. And it's kind of like you're in a spin just for 9 days, like, you know, reading everything and doing, you know, like it's, I was very fortunate in a weird way that this movie wasn't getting financed so easily because no one wanted to make it for so long because it was so good and so interesting. You know, I had that extra bit of time to prepare, and I wish every movie was like that. And, you know, unless you're Daniel Day-Lewis or Meryl Streep, you can't do that. You know, it's very, very rare. So it was just luck, really. But I mean, I try and do that on every single project I'm on. But like I said, you can't always do that. It depends on how everything sticks together and what the director wants and all these things.
And James, what did attract you to this part? The unspoken thing in this conversation is that halfway through the film, it changes somewhat. You know, and some people would look at it and go, maybe not for me.
Well, that's why it was for me. I think you know, that plot twist and many of the other plot twists in the film, I think, were all totally justified. It just, you know, it was the perfectly, you know, close your ears for a moment. It was a perfectly constructed script. And, you know, I've read a lot of scripts in 7 years. You know, some really great films that have become very, very successful. But this one in script form was by far the tightest, and it was all there on the page. So that was the first thing. And then meeting Sally in person, as I've said in many interviews, she's the kind of person you meet and you're kind of like, whoa, you know, she's a real force of nature. And it's like, she's the kind of person that you want on your side. Mm-hmm. And there are very few people in this industry, especially filmmakers, who have a really, really strong vision, but can actually translate that into the movie, can actually put that in the film. You know, it's a very difficult thing, pragmatically, making a movie. So many things go wrong. And I'm sure Sally will mention
it. It's all a catalogue of errors because everything goes wrong. It's kind of chaos is the natural is the natural state of things, I think, when making a movie. You spend 6 years preparing something and then you actually shoot it in 28 days. And, you know, and we did all of the post in 10 weeks, which was actually even tighter and more stressful than the shoot, as it turned out. So, you know, you are by that point just kind of on automatic kind of on automatic pilot firefighting. So.
And Sally, from what I gathered, your experience prior to this is you had worked on shorts, you've done some television work, How different was doing a feature like this compared to what you had done before? And in what ways were you prepared and what ways were you not prepared?
Well, I'd worked in the film and TV industry for about 10 years, and just over 10 years, actually. And I definitely felt more than ready and prepared for everything. I mean, there's certain things you can't prepare for. So, you know, there's no way that you can ever be fully prepared, because it's about kind of surfing the wave almost and staying afloat as things happen and being spontaneous and in the moment. I was as prepared as I could have been. I mean, I know 2 or 3 years in, I was feeling like, oh, okay, I could really shoot this movie already. But I'm actually glad that it took a little bit longer to make, because I do think that the script improved. There were certain like layers and detail and levels of depth that I was able to put into the film that only really came about because I probably spent too long with the script developing it. But, you know, when it actually came to making the film, I was ready. I really was.
One of the most important dynamics in the film is between James's character and Fayed El-Sayed. I'm sorry. Sally, when you're thinking about two brothers or two young men to play brothers, you know, if you cast in this particular film, if you cast that wrong, the whole movie's out. Right.
Absolutely. And we had a bit of a struggle casting Mo, just because I hadn't found my Mo right until the final days. We were, you know, the clock was ticking and I still hadn't found my Mo. And so we had casting scouts out in shopping centres around London approaching young guys saying, hey, do you want to be in a movie this summer?
Sure. That one. Yeah, I've heard that line before.
Yeah. And but, you know, and interestingly, there was actually a lot of talented people who came in that way. So, you know, it's amazing how much untapped kind of talent there is around. But I had actually met Fadi 3 years previously at Arsenal Football Stadium at an anti kind of knife crime event. And I'd seen him and thought, oh, he's way too young. So he'd just gone off my radar. And then somebody said to me, have you seen him recently? And I was like, no. And they were like, well, I really think you should. You know, he's no longer the kid you saw before. And puberty had hit and he'd grown. and he was just perfect. And obviously I'd been working with James for a while, so when I put James and Fadi together, you know, the chemistry was there. Well, and Fadi was actually cast only 2 days before we started filming.
Well, and it's interesting, people see this in the film, Fadi has to play, at least I thought, you see him when it starts, speaking of puberty hitting, when you see him at the start of the film, he's playing very young. Mm-hmm. And by the time we get to the end of the movie, he's been through an awful lot of stuff, and he seems much older, maybe just much older than his years. And similarly, James's character goes through this thing where he starts the film, as I said, very threatening, very, very harsh, very, and finishes the film in a very different place. So I don't know if I've got a question here so much as it's just kind of an observation. Well, you know what? Let me ask James this question. You're in the situation where Fadi is playing your brother. You know, in a romantic comedy, the director has to think about, you know, will these people have chemistry together? You're playing an older brother to his younger brother. Did you have to feel like you had some chemistry or some responsibility for this younger? I don't even know if he's actually younger than you. I assume he is. But what, you know, what had to be there for you to feel real in the role?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You hit it on the head. It's chemistry for any type of movie, whether it's a drama like this about brothers or a romantic comedy. And that's something you just can't fake, and that's something that's not in the script. Mm. That's all in casting.
Yeah.
I think really what we did was, it was Sally and I basically sat down and said, okay, Fadi has wonderful instincts. He's perfectly cast for the role, but he's never done a movie before. Mm. And he's been cast 2 days before we start shooting. So what we did was we just said, okay, look, let's make it so Fadi can meet me in character. He didn't know, you know, he'd never met me, he didn't know anything about me. So he met me as Rashid. So right from the first time he met me all the way through the end of filming, I was just Rashid, and I would create a realistic relationship of these two brothers, and I would create that vibe. So what happened was that off set, you know, even when the cameras weren't rolling, I would, you know, treat him like my younger brother.
That was a technique that, you know, I used a lot, because what happens off camera really informs what's exactly happening on camera. So you don't have a lot of rehearsal time. So it's about constructing the relationships off camera that then inform what happens within the scenes on camera. And Fadi actually said he wasn't sure about James because James kept hitting him. he wasn't sure if he liked him until, you know, the end of the movie and he actually met the real James. You know, Fadi was a delight to work with because he was so open and dedicated to the film. I mean, he actually had his 18th birthday when we were shooting, and it, he postponed it so that it didn't interrupt his process with the movie, which I thought was amazing that someone would postpone their 18th birthday and chose his dedication. So
he didn't want to be all happy and everything in the midst of this movie.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was, you know, he did an incredible job.
So the movie is rolling out now in actual theaters. As we're speaking, it's opened in New York, and it's going to open in L.A. tomorrow, April 5th. How many places around the country can people see it now?
We're in 12 different cities. So as you said, it was at the Landmark Sunshine in New York, and tomorrow is Landmark New Art in Los Angeles. And then we're in San Francisco, Seattle, Berkeley, Philadelphia, San Diego,
Boston,
Minneapolis,
Denver,
and Washington, D.C.
It's like so, watching a tennis match between the two.
I know. I mean, sadly, we aren't going to all of them, but yeah, that's where people can see the movie.
Very good.
Go to our Facebook page or our Twitter. It has all the information there. That's the best thing. Yeah,
we've got quite an active kind of Facebook and Twitter, and a lot of the actors are on Twitter and Facebook and like to kind of talk to people. So it's been a really good kind of place, because as we go around the world, there are people from all over that want to, you know, communicate about the film. So it's such a good way to kind of have a place for that.
That's great. Well, folks, listen, watch for My Brother the Devil, written and directed by Sally El-Husseini and starring James Floyd. We're past film festivals. It's in actual theaters now around the United States. You can order it if you're overseas from the United States. You can find it on DVD in some countries already. And watch for it to come to a theater near you very soon. And Sally El-Husseini and James Floyd, really enjoyed the film. Look forward to seeing more work from both of you. And thank you both for joining us, Mr. Media, today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You can see and hear almost 1,000 Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest 2-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Marc Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, The TechCrunch Headlines, and The Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com, and tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening. Today's episode of Mr. Media Interviews is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. You know GoDaddy.com from their wild and sexy commercials, but isn't it time you actually test drove their web hosting and domain registration services yourself? For a limited time, Mr. Media listeners can save 10% on the already low price of web hosting services at GoDaddy.com by entering the promo code POD4 at checkout. Again, that's 10% off web hosting when you go to GoDaddy.com and enter the promo code POD4, that's P-O-D, the number 4, at checkout.